what you've done is you've put the very best alarm system on the building. You've put bars on every window. You've got the very best locks on every door. You've done everything you possibly could. And this cyber criminal has just walked up to the front door and pressed the buzzer. And a member of your team's opened the door and invited them in.
Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk. I am a career coach for tech managers and CEO of the PeopleStack. My guest for this episode is Rob May. He is managing director and founder of Remsack. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
All right, Rob. So we'd love to hear about Remsack. So can you tell us what is your mission and what is your role as managing director?
Okay, so our mission is to help our clients get the very best out of technology, in short. And that implementing, managing, and supporting secure, resilient IT solutions that help them grow their organizations efficiently and safely. So big focus on managed services and a big piece around cybersecurity and strategy and understanding, you know, what's the business trying to do and what's stopping the business from doing that, and how can we use tech as an enabler. And my job as MD is, you know, that's changed over the years. You know, very much when I started the business, I was hands-on techie, and I'll never not be a techie person. But you know, my role really is to grow our business and the strategy of our business. Albeit, I still work with a small number of our clients, because I would hate to let that go. I still really get a buzz out of that, but we're 65 people in the team now, so running that is quite different to when, you know, there were just a few of us, which is how it was when I started.
Okay, understood. And can you tell us a little bit more about the managing director? This is the MD role. So for folks over in the US, and I admit myself, when I saw MD, and I kept seeing MD for folks, you know, over in the UK, I'm like, oh, they're doctors. Oh, that's great. There's doctors that are working there too. You know, cause we call it, you know, medical doctors. So would this be similar to say a CEO role?
Absolutely. And I think in some ways it ages the business, because I think startups in the UK now would typically call the role CEO. So you know, my responsibility is for the direction and the strategy of the business. And I think really the MD or the CEO is sort of, they're like a watchmaker really, and they need to make sure that all the cogs in the watch are all working properly together to result in a timepiece that does exactly what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love that analogy. And I also love, I was reading your bio on the Remsack website, and you mentioned that for many clients, you serve as their outsourced IT director. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about your experiences with these clients as a way of kind of shining a light on some of the problems and potentially some of the solutions that you've helped your clients with. So is there, when you think about, when you've served as an outsourced IT director, can you think of the number one kind of problem that these clients are facing?
Tough question. I think for a lot of businesses, it's about transforming. It's about using the technology. I think, and you just got to look at what are the problems? My two favorite questions to a client is, and sometimes these aren't IT. Sometimes you know, I find a lot of my conversations start with the business and start with understanding the business. And my two favorite questions are, what is it that you're tolerating? And that opens a huge can of worms. But if you can understand what people are tolerating, that helps you see where the frustrations are. And then the other question is, and you can ask this to anybody in an organization, is if you had a magic wand and you could change anything, what would you change? Mm-hmm. And often when you ask those questions, you get some really insightful input on what the issues really are. And often as well, that input comes from people that, the board, the C-suite aren't consulting with. You know, it could be someone really, really junior in an organization just says, I find this so frustrating, and if only we could change it, life would be so much easier. And all of a sudden that snowballs into, oh my goodness, this is the root of the problem. I love it when you can lead conversations that way, and then you see the penny drop and people see what the solution is, and you think, okay, because it's not just about technology being an enabler. I think the company that you work with, the technology company that you work with, they need to be an enabler in their own right. And to my mind, you're buying in outside skills and resources that you don't have in your own team, and you're bolstering your team. And that's what we do.
Yeah, and I love that too, that aspect of being a consultant or a coach, where people come with one problem and it may seem like a relatively small problem to them, but then once you peel the layers back, and I love that, what are you tolerating question, that really just opens up, because sometimes people like, oh, it's not really that bad. I just need to, like you said, I just need to go buy something. I just need, help me find this one piece of magic software that's going to solve all of my problems. But then you take a step back and what are you tolerating? Oh, well, we're tolerating quite a bit, and that really opens it up.
Absolutely. It's such a powerful question. And, you know, you get what you tolerate in life.
Yes.
You know, it's not just a business thing. So to actually get people to think about it, and it sometimes it just totally changes the energy in a meeting as well. And it's like, okay, this is proper advice. This isn't, we've had a meeting with an IT supplier and we've told them that we want to buy something. Mm-hmm. They're really working to understand our business and whether we do need to buy something or whether we need, you know, a part more training or handholding. And again, sometimes people do training wrong. So it's like, well, how are you doing that? How are you getting the message across? How are you, Harvard did this study that says that an intelligent person needs to hear something 6 times before they get it. Mm-hmm. And yet, so often, we put something on a to-do list and we think, right, we need to tell our people that. And you tell them and you tick the box and you say, I've done that. But actually, you know, that's not job done. Because if you test how that's been received, on average, it hasn't been. People need to hear it at least 6 times. So that's part of that journey.
Yep. And I imagine, so there's absolutely a human, a people side to tech, which is what we talk about mainly here on the People's Talk podcast. And I'd imagine that asking those powerful questions like that, like, what are you tolerating? If you had a magic wand, what would you change? Really showing yourself to be someone who's, I'm not just here to say, okay, here's a Band-Aid, here's a a one-time solution that might work for a little bit. It's, let's really take a deep dive here, not just into your tech, but that it opens up that space to talk about the human aspect and the human aspect of running a company and how that might be getting in the way and keeping businesses from really thriving. So I'd imagine that very often becomes a part of the conversation as well.
Absolutely. It's fundamental because we're all human, right? And every business, and it doesn't matter the size of the business or where the business is based, we all fundamentally have the same issues. And I think if you can have those, you can have those conversations and help people, then you become this more than a trusted advisor. You become a friend to them and to their business. And that's great for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's really, you know, as a business owner myself and knowing other business owners, that's really what we want. We don't want another, you know, just another cold conversation with a salesperson who doesn't really seem to get us, right? We all want to connect with people, right? So that definitely resonates with me in terms of, yeah, I want more friends. And some of them are going to be outside of my business life, but for sure, it makes it more fun and fulfilling to have more in deeper connections with people. And some of them may be people who I hire and I pay money, but that's great. You know, let's exchange value here. So I love that. I love that approach to running, you know, quote unquote IT consulting when so many people approach it in such a non-human and transactional way. Having said this all about, you know, the human aspect of IT and fixing our IT problems, I want to talk a little bit about your TED Talk. So for those folks who haven't had a chance to listen to and watch Rob's TED Talk, I highly, highly recommend it. It's totally worth it. It's 15 minutes or something like that of your time. But for those people who haven't seen it or don't know about it, your TED Talk, as I've noticed, has come to be subtitled, "We're All Porn Stars." But then actually the title of your talk is "Your Human Firewall." So for those folks who haven't had a chance to watch it yet, or even for those of us who have watched it, as a reminder, can you tell us a little bit about what that talk was about and what the ideas were that you shared there?
Yeah. So, and the porn star thing was perhaps a risky start. But the concepts of that, and I sort of walked out onto the TED stage with this big sign behind me saying "Hello, porn stars." the reason for that, there's a thing on social media that suggests that we all have a porn star name, and to find out your porn star name, you take the name of your first pet, followed by the first part of the road that you lived on when you were growing up. And that's your porn star name. And I turn to the audience and I ask them to turn to the person they're sat next to and introduce their porn star alter egos. And there's a great deal of hilarity, and it's edited out because
okay,
TED film, because I didn't think I was going to get the audience back because everyone's laughing. And
that's funny. Oh, I'm so glad that you shared that, because it's hard to tell during the talk when you're watching the video. Because when you first introduced it, you can sort of see the audience like, what is this guy? What is this? And they're like a little bit shocked, but then you can see them all getting engaged and everything. And then you had to say, okay, can I have your attention, please? So you had to get them back.
Absolutely. And then, so they've all thought this is really funny, and I explain how this is, you know, all over social media, and there's equivalents of it. Every time there's anything, you know, major going on in the news, there's a version of this. And then I explain that actually, whilst they thought that was fun, it's not fun. It's actually sinister, because what I've just asked the audience to do is share with strangers information that they might use for their password retrieval for things like their online banking. Yeah. And this is sort of how I open the door to having a conversation about cybersecurity. And the message of my talk is twofold. One, it's that cybersecurity is not an IT problem. I think way too many companies think, yeah, IT can sort that. But it's not an IT problem. It's a problem for the entire business. Ultimately, it's a problem for the business owners. And, you know, the laws in Europe changed last year with the introduction of GDPR, which also impacts, obviously, people in the States dealing with European businesses. But GDPR very much makes cybersecurity the responsibility of the business owners. And the human firewall, which was, as you say, what I originally called the TED Talk, the human firewall is, I make the point that the human firewall is our behavior. It's your behavior. It's my behavior. And the human firewall is both our biggest risk and also our best line of defense. You know, people can spend a lot of money on cyber, and I encourage people to do all the best practice things. But you can put everything in place, and yet still suffer a breach. And when you suffer that breach, it's because the analogy I always use is, if you put all the best practice things into place, it's a bit like if your business was a building, what you've done is you've put the very best alarm system on the building, you've put bars on every window, you've got the very best locks on every door, you've done everything you possibly could, and this cyber criminal has just walked up to the front door and pressed the buzzer, and a member of your team's opened the door and invited them in. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens in a cyber attack. So the idea of my TED Talk was to say, look, cybersecurity isn't an IT problem. It's a problem that affects everybody. I called it the human firewall. And I showed a number of things in that talk about how it impacts everybody. There's some stuff that I do around, you know, just going to a coffee shop or whatever. And I think where it's been really successful is people watch it and think, wow, this does impact me. The number of messages I get from people saying, you know, I watched this at work, or in some cases, work made me watch it. But then I went home and I showed it to my entire family because it affects my wife and my children. And that's great, because, you know, TED's about having this idea that's worth spreading. And what's interesting is I never wanted to do a TED Talk on cybersecurity. I wanted to do a TED Talk, and I got encouraged to do one on cybersecurity. And yet it's been such a powerful thing for me, and it's been a big enabler and a big door opener. So it's been a very good thing.
Yeah, and I have to say, when I watched it, after I watched it and listened to it, and even hearing you talk about the stuff right now, that we're just opening the door. Because if you just open the door, then none of the precautions that you've put into place are going to matter. And I have to admit that it brings up mixed emotions. It brings up certainly fear, but it also brings up this determination to say, all right, let's fix this. Right. Yeah. And so are those the kind of reactions that you're getting from people? Because I can imagine that some people are like, oh my goodness, I'm just so scared now. What do we do? That people can kind of fall into that kind of fear. It's like, why are you sharing all this? I don't want to know it. But to me, the purpose of sharing that kind of stuff is to empower people, to give you more information about it. So what kind of reactions have you gotten from the TED Talk?
Yeah, so mixed. I mean, a lot of people want to know more, and, I've had lots of invitations to come and give talks and give longer talks than the TED Talk and delivering education. You get some people who say, oh, well, if that's the case, I'm always going to have someone open the door, and therefore I may as well not try, which just baffles me. Because it's like, well, you don't leave your house unlocked. You know, if someone wants to break into your house, they will break into your house. But you you take precautions and you do lock the door when you leave your home and so on. I think there's been some really interesting conversations around culture. And I think cybersecurity and culture is an interesting one. So I talk in the TED Talk as well about whaling attacks, or CEO crime, as it's sometimes called. And, this is a problem the world over, but I'd cite in the talk, there was a stat at that time. In the UK, there was a successful whaling attack every 15 minutes of every working day. And when I'm talking to clients who have suffered with this kind of thing, you talk to the person, and the whaling attack, the way this typically plays out is there's a spoofed email that looks like it's from the CEO to the accounts team instructing them to make a payment. It's that type of attack. And when you talk to the accounts people who have actually pressed the money and, pressed the button and sent all this money to this criminal's website, what they'll typically say is, as far as I was concerned, it definitely was from the CEO, and it's more than my job's worth not to do what the CEO tells me to do. And we have to change that culture, because my view is it should be more than your job's worth to ever move money on the back of an email instruction.
Yeah.
And it should be the culture within the business that if you get that email, you go and talk to the person and say, is this really you? So I think there's a thing that there's another piece that always interests me. So at RAMSAC, one of the things we do for our clients is we will send them phishing emails, so that they're safe phishing emails, but they're based on real world current phishing attacks, and they're randomized across the business. So, the person you're sat next to is not going to get the same email as the email that you get. But what happens is, so if you were to receive one of these emails, we measure what your response is. So we measure, so I can see that, I've sent you this email, and Jen, in your case, you deleted it. But your colleague got it, who's sat next to you, and they click on the link. Uh-huh. And if they click on the link, we then bring up a warning message and we say, actually, you shouldn't have done that. And then we say, now click on this link to watch a 2-minute video to explain how you were tricked. And what's interesting is when we then go back into clients with the report, so I would come in and say, look, we sent this to 50 people or 5 people or 5,000 people, however many it is. And of the people that we sent it to, this is how many people simply deleted it. This is how many people fell for it. And of those, this is how many then went on and did the 2-minute training. Mm-hmm. And again, those results tell you a great deal about the culture within that business. Because sometimes we're having those discussions with clients and you say, you've got a real problem here, because you have loads of people, way more than average for our client base, fall for this and click on it. And if they'd clicked on it in the real world, you'd have a problem. But not only that, they then didn't go on to do the training. So I think it's led to some really interesting conversations around how seriously is your business taking this and this risk, and what's the culture like that's either enabling or disabling it to to proliferate.
Yeah, and the other aspect that I hear there too, especially in the it's more than my job's worth to not follow the CEO's direction, that the culture around leadership in a company like that where, you know, what is the CEO's role? What kind of culture is that CEO creating? Is it a, you know, you have to do what I say or else kind of culture, maybe even inadvertently, you know, what's the relationship between the different levels, you know, between the CEO, middle management, and the folks who are in the individual contributor kinds of roles, that it certainly opens up discussions around that as well. When it's, you know, why would someone say that when all it would take would be, hey, Bob, Rob, Jen, Mary, yeah. CEO, I got this email. It seems a little suspicious. You know, why not just go and have that simple conversation? So definitely some very interesting cultural discussions that this can open up.
Hi, everyone. We'll get back to the interview in a jiffy. But first, are you a tech manager? In other words, do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? Do you feel like you're wasting precious time going to useless meetings, dealing with administrative nonsense, and working late nights? Are you working 50 plus hours a week, but don't have the salary to show for it? It doesn't need to be that way. You can build thriving, high-performing teams who produce a measurable positive impact while earning the premium salary you deserve. Oh. And you don't have to work your butt off to get there. If this sounds like the kind of success you're striving for, then go to jenbunk.com/webinar to reserve a spot in my free masterclass. I share the 4 shifts that my tech manager clients made to achieve badass career transformation. That's jenbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the rest of the interview.
All right, Rob. So I want to move to the last question that I ask all of my podcast guests. And that question is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
I think, so when I'm recruiting, one of the things I always say is that there's lots of people, we interview lots of people who could do the job, but I don't interview lots of people who I consider are ransack people. So for me, it's about finding people where the culture fit is right. And part of that is about, you know, having technical people who can talk business and who can get business and can empathize and so on. But people who are, you know, real people. And I there's various things that I do when I'm interviewing, questions that I ask, where I just try to get to know who the person is. I think it's very easy to prep for an interview. I think there are questions that people are expecting, and almost when you ask those questions, you get, you know, off-pat answers. And I want to know, you know, who the person really is and what is it that inspires them or motivates them, or, you know, what book have they read that really has really made a difference to their lives? And one of my questions is, if you had to have a theme tune, what would your theme tune be? And I often say to people afterwards, look, just go with your gut reaction, and almost guaranteed when you're driving away from this interview, you will think of something else and you'll think, oh, I wish I'd said that. But it's kind of not the point. The point is, look, what's that gut reaction? Because what you come up with will give me an insight into who you are. And it's, I think interviews are hard because they don't typically give people the best opportunity to show themselves for who they really are. Yeah. And I don't think standard interviews are designed to do that. But that's the biggest challenge, is it's finding the right people who fit culturally with the type of organization that we are. And that sort of supportive. And I think there's a lot of people in IT as well who believe knowledge is power, and therefore try and build their little empires. And I really don't like that. And I've never allowed that to happen within Ramsack. My view is that I know stuff that you don't know, but equally you know stuff that I don't know. And you know, it's really empowering. We have a discussion group at Ramsack called Technobabble. And what I love about it is everyone in the organization who is technical is a member of that group. And if you're stuck with something, you just share a message with that group. And what I love about it is, you know, one day it's me asking the question, and it could be the most junior person in the company, or someone who's literally just started with us as a trainee, who happened to be on a training course yesterday, and they know the answer to the question. And yet the following day, it could be, you know, them asking the question. And I think, you know, I know that. I was doing that 25 years ago, and here's the answer. But that's fantastic. And it's really empowering. But it's finding those people, and it's finding the people who want to be a part of that type of team.
Yeah,
and with the people skills that goes with that.
Yeah, and I love what you said about that an interview is about giving people the opportunity to show their true self. And that really does completely change the game for a lot of people, because I think a lot of people see interviewing, okay, who do I want to hire? I want to figure out who I want to hire as a way of, you know, for example, how much does this person know? How much knowledge does this person have? Or I want to hear about this person's experiences. You know, how much confidence do they have? But by really looking at it, like, I want to be able to let your true self shine. And that's how we're both going to figure out whether this is going to be a great job for you or not, and whether you're going to like working here, and whether it's you're going to really fit into the culture in a way that we can all empower one another. And that really reminds me of one of my favorite ways of thinking about interviews, is that if that person gets hired, the interview basically becomes your first one-on-one with that person. You know, your first meeting. You know, if we have one-on-ones, we have one-on-one meetings with our with the people on our team, that's what you can kind of look at it as. And I love looking at it that way, because it makes it a little bit less, you get a little bit less nervous from both ends, because the interviewers get nervous too. Yeah. Where it's just like, this is a conversation with another human. Let's talk and maybe have some fun along the way, but to really get to know one another. So I love those questions. And possibly, I wonder if the "what are you tolerating" question could be appropriate during the interview process in any way, to sort of get it a sense of, like, what more could you want out of your life, out of your career, out of the impact that you want to have, to kind of get a sense that, you know, how more that person can grow. And that can be a good way of kind of getting a sense of, is this person going to really thrive here or not?
Yeah, totally. So I think you're absolutely right. I also like, depending on what the position is, I actually really like going for a meal with the applicants as well. Because again, I think you see another side to somebody. They let their guard down a little bit. But I also like to see how they interact with, you know, waiting staff, for example. I want to see how, whether they're not people who are waiting on the table, and whether they thank them, and, you know, that kind of thing. But Another sort of chain of my questions is, think of someone that you work with that energizes you. And what is it about that person that energizes you? And that gives you an insight. And then the follow-up to that question is to think of someone else you work with who technically is really good at their job, but they totally drain you of energy. And what is it about them? And it's just those sort of questions just help get that understanding. And there's a bit of the, what are you tolerating element in that, in terms of when you start to hear what it is, the things that they really like, but perhaps more importantly, the things that drive them potty.
Yeah, the draining question, that's a good one. It's a nice take. I like the draining question better than sort of the original one that it reminds me of, that I think a lot of people use, is the, what's your biggest weakness? So the classic, tell me your biggest strength and then tell me your biggest weakness.
You're absolutely right. And it's a lead into the draining question, because they're not expecting the draining question.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think so many people, like you said in the beginning, are prepped for that what's your biggest weakness question, that they know, well, my biggest weakness is I work too much, or something like that, to make themselves look better. But when you go into, you ask that presumptive question of, think of someone who is really good, but that person just makes you feel drained. Right. We all have those people in our lives, but you can't skirt around that, right? You have to just, in the moment, think about, all right, who is this person and how am I going to describe them? And then you can use that person's response as a way of figuring out.
Right? It doesn't matter who you are. As you say, everybody can think of that person. I call them mood hoovers. You can just think of the mood hoovers that you've met or that you've worked with over the years, and it's trying to unpick what that means, and it's another insight into the person when you're trying to work out this challenge.
Mm-hmm. So I have another question for you, Rob, that's around interviewing. I love that we went in this direction. It's a really, really important topic. And you had mentioned that there's the people who want to build this knowledge is power empire, and that is not the way that most of us want to go in terms of building a business. However, a side of it, though, is that I'm going to assume that there's certain knowledge that's required, especially for working for a company like yours, where there's lots of technical aspects to the job that the folks who you work with do. So given that, I wonder how you approach knowing whether or not someone actually has the technical skills, the technical knowledge that would be required to work for a company like yours.
Yeah, so dependent on what the role is, we have a series of technical interviews, and that will be a part of the process. I don't get involved any longer with the technical interview side of things. I work on the basis that the team manager is doing the appropriate technical tests, and they found someone that they think can do the job. I just want to make sure from a culture point of view that I've met them and I've asked them my questions, and I think, yeah, okay, so great, you've ticked the box and we know what you can do. Or actually, just as importantly, we know what you can't do. Mm-hmm. Because very much a big believer in, well, firstly, nobody knows everything, but secondly, that it's about lifelong learning, and it's working out where do we need to focus. So if you come and join us, where do we start with your training? So we still do the technical stuff. You're absolutely right. We're a technical company, and if people are applying for technical roles, we test them and prove that they can really do what their CVs, what their resumes say they can do. Whereas some people have put down names of products or technologies that they've seen once rather than actually really know and can do. So we test that what they're claiming is true. And then we work out, okay, so what will that training and development path look like, assuming they've sort of passed the human element, which is really, I guess, what I'm looking at when I'm doing my part of the interview process.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, we are hiring humans. We're not hiring just a stack of skills or a stack of knowledge, that it's a whole person. And I love that you have such a focus on lifelong learning and training and development. And it's not just about what do you already know and what can you do on day one to hit the ground running, although that can be really good. But that it's kind of assuming you're still going to have more to learn. How can we help you more, right? How can we help you learn even more? Where's the training and development going to be? So it's great to see that you're focusing on that, especially as a relatively small company that has, probably limited resources like most small companies do, to be able to direct some of those resources toward training and development is just wonderful to hear.
It's the number one, when I ask people why are you looking to change job, the number one answer I get is because I was promised training and development and I've never received it. And I think people want to grow. There's lots of talk about millennials and how millennials, keep changing their jobs and the companies that they work for and so on. And we haven't found that. We found that, we take people on, and so long as people feel that they're growing, they will be content. And I maintain it's not a millennial thing. I think it's applicable to any generation, actually. If there's not growth, if there's not development, and if it's not interesting, people will look elsewhere. And we've got people who have so we just had our 27th birthday as a business, and I've got people who've been with me right from the start. They're not doing the same jobs anymore because every single year they've learned something else and they've grown and they've developed. And that's true for me too. I as I say, I'm a big believer in lifelong learning, and I continue to do training courses and get whatever education I can get to grow, because I think as a leader of a business, you imprint on your business. So if I'm not growing, the business isn't going to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I caught that you changed think that they're growing to feel that they're growing. I'm a big believer in paying attention to language, and that's why I caught that. And that's absolutely what it's been for me too, is sort of switching from the thinking brain to the feeling soul and heart, right? So somebody might think that they're growing, but that has a lot of connotations to it, and it gets a little messy. But do you feel like you're growing? Versus no. I love that you made that change there. That switch.
Yeah, and conversely, I can think of people in the past who we've put through training and development, and yet when we've done one-to-ones with them, they don't feel that they're growing. So that's where the feeling is really important as well, because you've got to feel that this is good for you. I think there's some training that we do, there's some training that our teams have to do, that we have to do that, and you have to do that training because we're required to do it, and we're required to do it to keep certifications or whatever it is. But we try and balance that there's some stuff that you've got to do, but the most important thing is, are you enjoying it? So we give everybody days off each year to do personal development, and that can be anything. But if you want to do something that's going to develop you, so it can be completely non-work related, but if it's challenging you or stretching you or whatever, we'll give you paid time off work to go and do that, because that's part of this whole, am I growing and do I feel that I'm growing? That's it's important, and I'm glad you noticed my correcting in terms of that, because I think it's what people feel that very important.
It's so important, and it switches it from the have to I want to. I get to do this. This is an awesome opportunity, and you just get so much more out of a training or whatever it might be called, or a workshop or some sort of opportunity to grow. You get so much more out of it going into it with that kind of feeling, that kind of energy. Oh, cool! I get to do this, as opposed to I got this email and they're making me do the training.
I think I was just going to say, and then you just said it, but I think that switching from I have to actually I get to is even better. You know, it's and they see that as a benefit, and it's fun, and it's part of what makes working at Ramsack, you know, such a cool thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome, Rob. Well, thank you for taking the time to chat today. I love that we got to talk about a lot of the things that I had planned, but also some of the topics, including interviewing and culture and lifelong learning culture, that did not have planned, but that this conversation did move in a wonderful direction and some very, very important topics. So thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And if people, if people want to learn more about Ramsack, or if people want to learn more about what it is that you do, what's the best place for people to reach out or look online?
Okay, so www.ramsack.com is probably the easiest place, and do check out the TED Talk as well. So if you just search for Rob May, Human Firewall, you'll get my TED Talk and watch that and share that and help spread the cybersecurity message.
Wonderful, wonderful. Again, thank you so much, Rob, for spending some time today to talk. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, for me too.
All right, folks, that's Rob May. He is Managing Director and Founder of Ramsack.